Hi, you are listening to a free Majority Report. If you would like to become a member, please go to majority.fm.
Yes, Amy.
Oh, my name's Janine Garofalo. How are you?
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, March 28th, 2014. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live from the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, it's Casual Friday. You know what that means. Cliff Schechter will be joining us. Also on the program today to give me a movie recommendation, Matthew Film Guy. Northwestern athletes, we'll get to that story, have the right to unionize. Chris Christie, his lawyer says, not only is Chris Christie completely exonerated by this report he paid for, but it turns out the ladies just can't maintain their emotional state enough not to close down a bridge.
When in doubt. The ladies' emotions.
And a risk analysis of GMOs. It backs up what we've been saying on this program, but it does so in a much more intelligent way, and one which we will borrow and then repeat. Also, folks, I want to take the, I got an email from a listener saying, it might be a good idea to start off the show occasionally by thanking your members. And it, of course, it's a great idea. I mean, for many reasons. Later in the program, I will talk about this sort of Twitter, I guess, eruption calling for the cancellation of the Colbert Report because of a joke he made. Apparently, it really is in many ways an attack on satire in and of itself. And I will address that, but I will say this, that the only you folks have the ability to cancel this program.
Doing a really
you
good
folks,
job at it.
No, you folks also, only you folks have the ability to make this program happen. And so I thank you for the opportunity. I feel it on a daily basis, but I don't articulate it just because I'm always at arm's length from my emotions. But I want to thank all of you for your support. You make this program possible, and the more members that we get also make it possible for the show to get better and sustain itself. So I wanted to take the time to do that. And again, I thank you, members. You make this possible for not just obviously yourselves, but thousands of others. And also, we get emails from guests occasionally also thanking us for essentially getting them into the bloodstream of the media. And that thanks really also goes to you members, because by supporting this program, you're also supporting a lot of the guests that we have and help them, we have a lot of producers of other shows, frankly, who listen to this program. And, just like I do, I mine other shows for guests. Our show gets mined for guests and ideas. And so that's theoretically how it works. And so you folks fuel a lot more than just my sitting here and blathering and Michael sitting there not doing much. And Matt, obviously. Don't speak, Mike. All right, we got to take a break. We'll be right back with Cliff Schechter.
make you lose your mind.
We are back, ladies and gentlemen. It's Casual Friday. You know what that means? That means Cliff Schechter. And you know what that means? That means the Cliff Schechter theme song.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC.
Yes, hello, Cliff. How are you?
I am doing well, Samuel. How are you?
I am doing well. Crazy day. There's just, aside from I got incredibly distracted by this whole Colbert stuff. I don't even want to talk about it right now. But another thing that I did not anticipate talking about was talking.
Go ahead. Sorry, right. I don't even know what's really going on with the Colbert.
You got to. You have to be knee deep in Twitter to really follow this, but. I did not anticipate even having any interest in talking about this Chris Christie commissioned Chris Christie report, but I was watching New York One last night as I was trying to get my cable box to work, and I saw a report on this on the report. Now, just we know that the report was commissioned by Christie with $1 million of taxpayer money. That part of it doesn't bother me as much as he hired his own lawyers. I mean, people he literally has gone on family trips with to do a report to see if he did anything wrong. And shocking, the report is going to come out and say he didn't. But I'm watching this New York One report on the report, and there is virtually, they take it completely at face value. It was stunning to me.
That actually is stunning, because at least some other news outlets just mock it in the manner in which it deserved.
Yes,
there are so many awesome parts of that report. We'll get into that. Go ahead.
Well, but I mean, yeah, I mean, of course, on MSNBC, they're gonna pull it apart. Right. Maybe I didn't watch any other outlets in terms of addressing it. CNN, apparently, if it didn't happen on an airplane, it's not going to be on Fox.
Well,
I can only imagine,
because I wanted to know what the weather was in Malaysia.
Yeah, and
so, but on CNN, and then they actually did mention it. They broke their nonstop Malaysian airplane coverage to mention Christie and mock the report a little bit. So that was nice.
Okay. Well, and I imagine that they're cracking champagne at Morning Joe this morning. But but this report is I mean, I have to say, I mean, you know, we can go through some of the details of the report, you know, for what it's worth. They basically said that even though they didn't talk to any of the principals involved in this, they did talk to Chris Christie. We can't see any of the raw interviews. They reference stuff.
Well, why would you want to talk to the people that were actually involved?
I mean, you know, there's another thing. There's another answer to this. I mean, they could say, well, we couldn't talk to the people who were primarily involved, so we really don't have a complete report, and so we can't really issue a report. But, of course, this was all a charade, and I have to say, when I first heard about it, I thought, nobody's going to buy this. But I see that New York One report, and I think, this is brilliant. It was brilliant.
No, I mean, you can never lose, you know, a bet today. What is it? You'll never lose a bet. Was the old line? I can't think of it. You never lose a bet underestimating or overestimating the intelligence of the American people. Underestimating, I don't know. My brain's not working. But if you assume assume that the media, that you can't put out complete BS and get at least 50% of them to buy it, you're really giving the media way too much credit today. So some people took it apart and laughed at it, as they would. MSNBC was like, yeah, a rating spike.
Right.
That's their own Malaysian flight, is Chris Christie. It's more of a Zeppelin, if you will, but it's same idea. And they, you know, they some people jumped on it, but you're right. There were other people that sort of took the thing at face value. To me, it's like this guy's whole career. You know, I feel like I'm sitting here staring at somebody and being like, is anybody else paying attention? Is this for real? You know, like I'm in some sort of twilight zone. It reminds me of when he scheduled his own separate election like a month away from Cory Booker's election and spent a couple million bucks on it. And actually, Biden was like, but we have to do it because we need to fill the spot as soon as possible, you know, because waiting 3 weeks longer would have been the end of the republic. And people just sort of accepted that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's like, are you kidding me? I mean, what, you know, in this report, it's hysterical, as you said. They have Dawn Zimmer, is that her name? The mayor of Hoboken.
Yes.
Yawning. And a picture of her, and they say, well, obviously she couldn't have been, nobody could have been bullying her.
Yeah, let me just explain that part of it, because it really is stunning. They got as part of this report, they analyzed the body language of the mayor of Hoboken at the event wherein the lieutenant governor supposedly told her, like, you got to play ball here. And the body language expert said it's very unlikely that she would have yawned around the time of receiving that information.
Who would yawn if they're being threatened? I don't know, somebody who's fucking tired? That's just one potential answer.
I'm sure there's a million different answers. But the idea that this would be a report, and that's how we dug into that charge there, was through, I mean, that's, you know, this is Bill O'Reilly stuff here. And
they'd want this report to be any more ridiculous, they could have just actually gotten a circus mime to come out and tell us the whole report.
Yes. We did reenactments. And according to our reenactments, Chris Christie was very sad about the whole thing.
Just remember, Sam, her yawn went back into the left.
That's a big tell. But, you know, the other aspect of this is that, I mean, it was a smart play, but it's really their only play, right? I mean, Chris Christie made a decision at one point, like, I'm going to fight this, and I've got whatever, 50-50 odds as to whether, I mean, I think the political thing is still over. I can't imagine that any of the big donors were like, oh, wow, well, Christie really, apparently he was exonerated. Maybe
I don't think the legal trouble is over yet either. I still think the ongoing investigations from a variety of committees, again, I stand by my prediction I said about a month or two ago, I still don't think, at the beginning of next year he'll be governor any longer. Because, I mean, he can do all the PR he wants. Eventually people are going to get to the heart of this thing, and now he's thrown a few other people under the bus. In addition to Wild Scene, like this guy Stepien, who he's like, that's another funny part of the report we'll wait till we get to. And these guys know too much about him. I don't know what he thinks he's doing, but he's thrown these people into the bus, and they're going to come around and start talking about him, as Wild Scene already has, saying that during the 9/11 memorial, he told them all about what he was doing. So it's theater, and I think in the end, they can't kill legal process with PR. He can hang out as long as he wants and play this game, and he released this report. I mean, again, another thing that just Twilight Zone. Like, he could have released the report weeks ago, weeks from now, 6 months from now, anytime, but he releases it literally right before he's about to go out to Las Vegas and kiss Sheldon Adelson's ring.
Yeah, and
couldn't be any more transparent.
Right, and I think, there is a good lesson in terms of the politics of this, because the media, this is the way that the media is played. I mean, it really does give you an insight. Like, you know, this seems like a joke to us, but it is going to impact the media coverage a little bit. And like you say, it doesn't do anything from a legal standpoint, although I think this is sort of a dry run. They got $1 million worth of legal defense work, because this is the firm that's going to end up representing him anyways in these legal proceedings. And so they got $1 million worth of a dry run on how they're going to run their legal defense when time comes. And it was paid for by the taxpayers. It was also, he's got very few options. And when you decide to go down that deny, never do anything but deny route, this was a smart play in that respect.
Especially if you think about the fact that he did want to get out to Vegas, or out towards the West Coast. because he's a big fan of the In-N-Out Burger animal style. And he knew he wouldn't be able to make it out there for that if he didn't do this.
But I do think you've got a good point, too, about the Sheldon Adelson thing. And I think they probably definitely timed the Kiss the Ring, dog and pony show.
Yeah, because Jeff is going out there, and Scott Walker is going out there. It's like the governors, the potential governors, and Walker, Kasich, and Jeff are all headed out there with him.
If he can get the money from Adelson, that's going to help him with other big money people, and he can at least put on a show that he can go in there. But he is a dead in the water. But I really do think that it's fascinating to sort of see the efficacy of something like this that you and I would dismiss out of hand as being a farce. But, I guess if you're New York One and you just don't have the time to really dig into it, you just say this is what the report said. And we should note that
this is sort of the equivalent of somebody else hacked my account and put their penis on it. Right. And this is the equivalent of that move by Anthony Weiner.
I've hired a social media expert who has come back with a report and said that yes, in fact, it looks like it was hacked based upon that person.
Based on the fact that he's comparing penises all over the internet, this could not possibly be my penis.
What's your highlight of the report? I don't want to go too far into it, but tell me what your highlight of the report was.
It's again the gratuitous swipes. Like, this guy is such a nasty a-hole who, the Wildstein, he could have, had the guy resign. He could have said, we didn't have a conversation, but he had to take that extra swipe in that press conference. He couldn't say, we were hanging out in different circles. I was an athlete in the, which is funny in and of itself, thinking of that, and was the president of the school. I don't know what he was doing. So right. Basically, he's like, you're a geek and I'm cool. And he does the same thing in this report. Like, maybe it's to attract people's attention away, but it only attracts anybody's attention away for like a minute, and then you get back to the stuff that Bill Stepien, this longtime political advisor of his, had dated, what's her name, the deputy chief
Kelly.
Of staff, and that maybe there's that had some, that was involved in this, and now Stepien has come out and said that that's crap, and it looks like he's going to, turn witness on Christie. Why?
He's got too much of a future, I think, in Republican politics. I mean, I think, the thing is that they're very good at rewarding these people. Stepien already left that job and walked into another fairly cush job. I mean, I think,
But so far, these guys have both, Wildstein has already come forward and told stuff. And contradicted his account. Stepien's lawyer denied it and said, we'll be giving our account of things. So maybe I'm wrong, but he certainly sounded like he was pissed to his lawyer that was put in there. I don't know.
Yeah.
I agree with you. Sometimes you get these guys other jobs that are good enough, but it doesn't seem like he's done that for these two. I don't know. You're right. I guess if you're going to publicly embarrass somebody, they're going to be like, a couple million dollars of no bid contracts on the other side of that rainbow. I don't know. Well, I guess we'll see. But I think he could be in a lot of trouble with those guys coming. I mean, look, Wildstein already is coming for it. He didn't judge that relationship right.
Yeah, I mean, it remains to be seen. But I want to move on to some other stuff. This week, I think it was, I don't know if it was the beginning, it was towards the end of last week or the beginning of this week where, there was a lot of talk now, basically because Nate Silver came out with a report that there's a 60% chance that the Republicans will take over the Senate. That seems more or less accurate to me, although I think, they're not even using his special algorithm yet. They're just judging, on a lot of things that are assumptions. We don't even know who the opponents are in many of those races. That could be facing Democrats, but the bottom line is, it seems to me, and we're giving this analysis on, we're about 3 days away from the end of the open enrollment for Obamacare. Obamacare's, you know, now gotten over 6 million signups through the exchanges. We don't really know how many people are new. I've seen predictions ranging from 20% have not been uninsured to 50% have been uninsured to more. That number, 6 million, does not include the 6 or 7 million in Medicaid expansion.
Yep.
You know, we have our problems with the Affordable Care Act, but talking about it from a political standpoint, I just think that the idea of Obamacare being a help or a detriment, or I should say how a Democrat speaks of Obamacare, I don't think it can be a detriment or a benefit for them any more than talking about Benghazi would. This is an issue that animates the base of the Republican Party. It's not going to drive out any voters for Democrats. It's also not going to keep any Democrats away. The Democrats need to offer something.
Yes. Well, you and I had this conversation 2 weeks ago along similar lines, and I'll get back to Nate Silver. I think, again, what the Republicans are very good at are creating buzzwords, right? Like socialism, liberalism, you know, whatever. And they don't end up meaning what they really mean. They just mean the other side are a bunch of evil, gay, African-American, Jewish, lesbian, you know, everything that basically Pat Robertson blamed for 9/11. You know, that's they're very good at doing that. So in the end here, you know, it doesn't, none of that stuff means anything, all right? What means something is that a Democrat needs to, if they're going to come back, they don't ever need to say the word Obamacare. You know what I mean? I mean, the whole point is you don't defend Obamacare by defending Obamacare, which is what I've said for a while. You go to the 70% plus people who think that more people should have Medicaid, and you tell them why the person you're against is stopping that. You tell them why the person you're running against wants you to lose your insurance because you're going to lose, because they want people with pre-existing conditions to lose insurance, and you support that, you support the current law, which is the opposite. You don't have to ever say Obamacare, the other side will, but you just keep responding, saying things like that. Talk about individual pieces. That's first of all, how you defend and how you go on the offense. And we've talked about other things. You go on the offense by doing what Brian Schatz just did, in Hawaii, and talking about not just protecting, but adding to Social Security.
Oh, did Schatz do that now? Because, you know, I've been talking about Begich doing that as well. And, you know, that to me.
Well, Schatz is in a primary with Colleen Hanabusa, who is like Pharma's best friend, who's a total, you know, corporate Democrat. And he's differentiating himself in the way that you and I were talking about Alex Sinks should have, and others. And he's smart enough, and he's doing it. And he's saying, I'm going to add to Social Security. He's going to, I know some people in that race, and I think you'll hear more about the minimum wage and what it should be raised to. And he's going to run a populist, you know, and you can see it already. I'm not predicting anything. You're watching it because of the Social Security thing that he's doing. He's running a populist campaign that's breaking the mold. This shouldn't take genius to figure any of this stuff out. It's just that Democrats listen to inside the Beltway people who say, no, you can't do that, even though all the polling says not only can you do that, you should. So that's in the primary, but I think you're going to see that from some more populist candidates in both.
Well, you know, I don't. Mark Begich, you know, is. He's certainly, you know, he's certainly been, you know, sort of around that area. But I mean, for him to come out in Alaska also and be pushing the expansion.
Yeah, and he's doing better in the
Washington
polling, by the way.
It's gridlock.
Oh, everybody else division.
Oh, hold on for one second. I'm sorry. I got
one jobs plan brings.
Are you there?
Are we okay?
Hold on for one second.
Yeah.
Hold on.
XL. I think that's a Keystone ad is interrupting
the show. 72% of Americans and the Wall Street Journal.
What happened?
The Washington Post.
There's a
USA
Keystone
Today.
Ad. That's
it makes so much sense. Even a divided
Congress. I wonder
Congress
where that's coming from.
It. Unions
coming
and
from
business,
that's
too.
Awesome.
This decision's easy.
Oh, it's coming from the Hill. All right, there we go.
I'm sorry that I set that up. I tried to get
it. You guys let me know when the ad is over, or just tell me what the script is, and I'll repeat it.
Yeah, I'm going to go deposit a check now.
I just had a computer. Yeah.
Yeah, enjoy the show, guys.
I expect you to use some of that money to take me out for a beer when I get to New York.
So. You got it, buddy. You got it. We get that
well,
sweet,
you
sweet
got it,
pro
Cliff. Sam's
Keystone.
Not really in on this.
All right. So go ahead. I'm sorry. So, you know, you got baggage doing this. I really think this is the way it goes. You do what, you know, you defend Obamacare by going on the offensive, but then you immediately just drop this bomb of, like, expand Social Security. I mean, how, as a Republican, or I mean, how do you respond to that? You can't. You cannot respond to that. And then you follow it up with raising the minimum wage. You come up with pay equality. You follow that one as the sort of the top line headline of a broader populist message. And, you know, I think the bottom line why Democrats don't do this is because it doesn't animate their donor base. And I don't know if the donor base would be against it. Maybe some of them might actually be, but you get their money and then you go out and do this if you want to win the race. I mean, that's just the bottom
line.
That's
right. And I, you know, and I'll just say, and I have to say this every time as a sort of prereq for me, I still hate Mark Baggage for voting against the gun background checks. He still pisses me off, but he is being very smart. Hate's a little bit of a strong word. Let's say dislike strongly, but he's still running a terrifically smart campaign when it comes to populism on economic issues, and exactly the kind of state, you know, like Alaska, where they would say, oh, you can't do that, even though, you know, everybody in Alaska is socialist. They all get, everybody by being born there gets a certain percentage of oil money. We'll go into that some other time. But, you know, he's doing it, and right now his numbers are better than some of the other Democrats that are running in similar type states who are not doing it. I can't prove that that's the reason.
Right.
But there are two. It's not like there's just a couple of jugheads, you know, running on the Republican side. They've got, I think, a former lieutenant governor and the attorney general. I mean, by definition, Republicans are mostly jugheads these days. But they've got two establishment-type guys and that crazy Joe Miller guy, but two establishment-type guys who are out there. And yet he is, I think, from last I saw, was ahead, you know, almost double digits in polling. This stuff works. And if the rest of this group, the ones from, you know, North Carolina and Louisiana, Arkansas, I'm not sure there's anything Mark Pryor can do because that state is headed so far away, and he's terrible in everything. He's one of the only Democrats who voted against background checks. He's one of two Democrats against gay marriage. He wouldn't even tell Bill Maher in Religious that he thought evolution was a fact. I just think he's, you know, not to mention, I'm sure, a lot of other economic issues. He's probably just toast, and if they were smart and did triage, they'd let him go. But that's another story. So let's go back to where we began, though, because it was about the Nate Silver thing. Because there are people, Democrats, the SEC and others who are freaking out, and now they're attacking Nate Silver, which is pretty funny to watch. And it's just so stupid because it says, you know, first of all, Nate Silver is a very smart guy, and all he did is what Democrats are doing who are running on raising Social Security, which is actually reading polling and not listening to conventional wisdom.
Right.
Right? He did that. He ended up breaking new ground and getting a ton of publicity and setting himself up by doing what was right there in front of him that any other statistician who was smart, who cared, could have done. He worked his butt off and he analyzed a million races, including little races a lot of people didn't care about and whatever. But that's what he did. He took numbers in a smart way when all the buffoons like Joe Scarborough sat there talking about what their fat guts were telling them, you know, and he actually based it on numbers. It's, you know, right now, what polling's a snapshot in time. And right now, with where Obamacare is right now, with where Obama's approval ratings are right now, you know, with where the campaigns that these candidates are running right now, he's taking a look at all that and saying there's a 60% chance. That's, you know, he's probably as close to right as you can be.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean it's going to be that way in 3 months or 6 months from now. It could be that they have an 80% chance of winning in 3 or 6 months or a 90% chance of losing it. It depends, as you said. I will say something right now just to tease you, Sam, and all your listeners here, but it's going to be a few weeks, so I apologize and I can't say. But, you know, I'm finding out right now about the potential of a major scandal right now with a Republican senator who's an incumbent who looks to be safe right now. That may not be the case in a couple weeks from now. Things... and I will share with you guys first of any broadcast outlet when this comes out.
Oh, yeah. All right. Beautiful.
But what I'm saying is things change.
Right.
You know, there could be – we just found out today in the House that Mike Rogers, you know, the crazy, you know, intelligence community-loving right-wing Republican who's in a swing district in Michigan – is not running for re-election. That's suddenly a district that's open for Democrats to potentially win. These things are going to change in a lot of ways. The national mood will change. As you said, 6 million people are on Obamacare now. It may be 7 million. It may be 8 million by then. I don't know. People will feel better about it. who are getting health insurance who weren't. There may be a couple individual candidates who are stepping up and doing better and looking at what Begich is doing and what Sherrod Brown and Tom Harkin and plenty of other people in red or purple states have done to win. And it may be completely, of course, it could go in the other direction too, you
right.
know?
I think it's like, you know, there's things change, but really, I mean, it seems to me that that Democrats have to offer something other than these people are loons, because that is not enough in an off-year election. It works in a presidential election.
Right, because you have the turnout.
You have the turnout, but that's all it is. This is all about turnout, and it's becoming so crystal clear here.
Hello?
Yeah, can you hear me? Cliff, are you there? What is going on? Cliff? Cliffy? Cliff? I hear him moving around. All right, let me call him back. Boop, 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 boop.
Are we okay?
Yeah, all right, yeah. So, Cliff, I mean, here's my point, is that things may change, but the Democrats have to offer something. And it's really, you know, like in a state like Michigan, I think there's an opportunity to talk about Social Security expansion. I think even I don't know if Kay Hagan will ever do this, but in North Carolina, I mean, Allison Grimes is talking minimum wage. Go for it. Go for the expansion of Social Security. That's what I say. All right, so I just got a text from Cliff. He wants to say he loves all of you, and we'll do this next week. I mean, he had to run as well anyways. So we will take this time to take a break. When we come back, we will be talking to Matthew Film Guy. We are back, folks. It's Casual Friday. We're so casual. We can't even get the technical stuff correct. Our timing's all off. Everything is all. But what we do have, ladies and gentlemen, is Matthew Film Guy to talk, to give me a movie suggestion. We also, of course, you know, this is, remember, this is heavy metals, folks. So just back off your volume a little bit. Matthew Film Guy's theme song.
Matthew the Film Guy is choosing your streams. Cassavetes on Netflix and other such themes. Maybe you'll watch one and learn a few things. Please recommend me a movie to stream. Matthew, please recommend me.
Matthew.
Sam.
Film guy, how are you?
I am well. How are you?
I am great. We have you on location today, correct?
That's right. I am doing one of my corporate jobs today, yes, lest you think that I am a complete elitist. I do work for a paycheck sometimes.
All right. Well, I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad you do that only sometimes.
That's right.
And so what's new, Matthew? I mean, what I know you got a movie suggestion. I know it's not Noah.
No, it is not. It is not Noah.
You don't like
all.
Those big epic movies, do you?
No, I like epic movies. I just, first of all, I'm not a big Darren Aronofsky fan.
Whoa!
I know he's a friend of yours.
What did you think of The Wrestler?
He's an old friend. It's an old friend. I mean,
The Wrestler was great, but it was definitely his homage to the Dardenne brothers, who were one of my favorite filmmakers, the Belgian brothers. So it definitely was a good appropriation of their style, and I enjoyed the movie very much. But I don't think of him as a particularly great filmmaker. He's good. I've enjoyed his films, but actually, I enjoyed that one, really. I didn't really like the Black Swan. I didn't really like the... what's the drug one, so...
Oh, yeah, that
I'm
one.
I'm not going to... I'm not going to run up to see Noah.
Now, the sort of sensitivity about that film. You remember that, right? I mean, Matthew, you were intimately involved in this.
No, I know. Yeah, go ahead. Tell the story.
Well, the story is that the guys who produced that movie...
Thousand Words.
What do they call it? 1,000 Words? They were the guys who had given me... I can't remember. They had promised me like $50,000 of finishing funds to finish A Bad Situationist. They had never...
That was pre 9/11 thinking of theirs.
That's right. And the film... No, but it's literally true.
It's literally true.
Well, they were in a pre 9/11 mindset. They had not seen the script because they wanted to, get involved in this movie after seeing Who's the Caboose. And I said, look, if I had shown you the script of Who's the Caboose, you wouldn't have given me a dime, which was not probably true. But the fact of the matter is I didn't want to show them the script of this. I just didn't want the interference. And I said, you get $50,000 is not much money. You know that. And... I think I spent about 50 of my own money on A Bad Situationist. I'm a wonderful businessman. And we shot the movie. Matthew, of course, this is where I first met Matthew. Ray Carney sent
you. Integral.
Ray Carney sent you down. You came over to I remember I interviewed you as to be my assistant, because I needed a director's assistant because I was going to be in it, right? And
totally. And I had done that before for Tom Noonan.
You had done it before for Tom Noonan. So the idea was at one point I realized like this guy's going to have to hold the script at all times. So I might as well just have him play my character's assistant in the movie. That way you're always around. You still managed by the end of the shoot. I couldn't find you because you were trying to hit on somebody on the crew. I can't remember who it was.
That is a total lie.
That is not a total lie.
It's a complete fabrication that you like to perpetuate just to make my domestic life difficult. But it is not true.
Come on. It was 10 years ago. She can't blame you for that. It was 15 years ago. It was 14 years ago.
Yeah, but it's still not true. Let's just put it that way.
All right. It was completely 100% true. And then, of course, people know the story of A Bad Situationist. It was about a fictionalized Joe Lieberman's son who was inculcated by some religious zealots to commit a terrorist attack. And it ended with him on his roof aiming a bazooka at a building in New York City. We were 8 weeks into editing when the planes struck the towers.
Which you consider a fateful day.
Which, yes, I mean, it was obviously...
I think there's like a Jungian aspect to that script. I mean, it is. It's bizarre.
Oh, there was so many more other... There was... it was right before the Russian takeover of the theater at that time. We had a theater takeover.
Right.
It was when the anthrax was being sent out. We had postal workers who were going to commit the terrorist attack. I mean, on and on and on. And...
It was a compendium of... popular terrorist activities.
Yes. And I, um, so I obviously, in addition to being in a state of shock, as I think a lot of people were in New York City at that time, I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do about this movie. And
yeah, it was a real tragedy. It was a real tragedy.
The guys who had funded it from Thousand Words.
Was it your first thought or was it your second thought? How?
No. It was no. I'm not making like Sarah Silverman has a great joke about like 9/11 was the day that my boyfriend broke up with me and it was a horrible day.
Right.
No, yeah, I mean it yeah. wasn't. No, I mean at one point yeah. it occurred to me like after a couple of days I got to go back to this and I'm like, wait a second, this is not remotely funny anymore. And the guys who were giving me the finishing funds were like, hey, is this going to impact the movie at all? Because they vaguely knew about it. I'm like, I don't know. It could cut both ways, but I want to send you a cut. But my editor is saying if I don't pay him, he won't pump it out of the Avid. And so they sent me 10 grand to pay my editor, and I paid the editor up to that point. I sent them a cut. They basically went radio silence for an extended period of time. I eventually tracked them down within a couple of months. And they said, look, here's the deal. Take our name off the movie and you can keep the money. But we're out for the rest of it. And
that's great.
Well, and then what ended up happening is that Matthew ended up having to finish the edit. Because
that's right. It became funny again sometime around 2005.
That's right. And we ended up finishing it. And in fact, Le Poupée, which is a song we use on this show, was what we had for the final song in that movie. We ended up Dave Derby ended up doing another great score for it and replaced that movie. But maybe we should just put that one in and just to give Poupée a break at one point. But Matthew did a great job on that, and also a great job on the extras.
That's right. The extras were a lot of fun to do because there was so much hilarious improv in that movie that never made it into the actual cut.
And the movie's sort of still a little bit of a jumbled mess, I think, in some respects. But
well, not to speak ill of the dead, but I blame you know who I blame.
Who?
I'm blanking on his name. May he rest in peace. Who played Bob?
Oh, Robert Schimmel?
Robert Schimmel, yeah. I feel like his character had to hold a lot of it together, and we wound up cutting around his performance a lot. So I think that was a fatal flaw.
That could have been problematic, and also you couldn't lean on the other stuff as much in some ways because it obviously was not funny in the same way. But, I mean, the Schimmel is actually sort of – we were debating as to whether or not we should cast him because I had him come in for an audition. And I was going to go with him, but I auditioned him. He wasn't really an actor. But he sent me an email. He said, if you know, people can go look up Bob Schimmel. A very funny guy.
Hilarious guy.
Great to hang out with. But I got an email from him, like right after the audition, saying, I'm so excited to be a part of this. When I was told by my doctor 2 years ago that you have 3 months to live because of your cancer, I thought I'm never going to have a chance to do it. And I don't know how much longer I'm going to live.
He played you, Sam. He played you.
Well, I turned to Matthew and I was like, Schimmel's in. I mean, this is not so fragile. It's, we've got a lot of other comedic presence in here. We'll see how he does. And then Schimmel ends up dying in a tragic car crash. I mean, just horrible. I mean, this guy had just the worst luck. I mean, it was stunning. It was stunning.
Yeah. He has a bad situation that says his legacy being a part of a great ensemble. And, he didn't ruin the movie. I just felt like his storyline was bigger in the original draft. It made it hang together. But all the vignettes, all the scenes, all the characters, Garofalo in blackface and David Cross is the chronic masturbator, all that stuff is still hilarious to me.
Sarah Silverman is the sex columnist. Benjamin,
sex columnist. Yeah.
John Benjamin and Mark Maron as two radical militant extremist fundamentalist Jewish postal workers who want to commit terrorist attacks.
Matthew film guy is the kind of Greek chorus who's there to witness everything and comment silently.
Craig Bierko as was in this film, and we were so close to getting Charlie Rose to make a cameo in this film in what would have been his greatest career mistake, but he was smart enough not to do it at the time.
And one of the best outtakes is from one of the salons featuring a scene between you and Stephen Colbert, who was just on The Daily Show, pre-Colbert show. That was one of the funniest, I think, scenes in the whole thing, but it's worth it to watch the outtakes for that alone.
All right. Now, look, let's take a we're going to take a second to take a break here and say goodbye to our freebies because it's not a freebie Friday. And then we'll come back. I want to hear the movie recommendation. And I want to we want to talk about this. You brought up Colbert. Let's talk about this on the flip side, because I know I'm curious as to your thoughts on satire. All right. But we'll take a quick break and we'll be right back.
OK. See you there.
Sitting at the pale